at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Johnson with KBOO-FM, celebrating 45 great years of broadcasting to the KBOO community in Portland and the Pacific Northwest. And we're together again for another half hour. I want to introduce a returning guest who has been with us before. Christopher Lord is the author of The Christmas Carol Murders, and then he has just recently followed that up with the Edwin Drood Murders. You got murder on your mind, don't you?
I do, Dan.
Well, welcome, Christopher. It's great to have you back.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Okay. Let's kind of cover a few things here. Bring us up to speed, if you will, because the stories are centering around a place called Dickens Junction. Where in the world is that? Who are the Droodists? And most importantly, who is Simon Alistair?
Well, Dickens Junction is a fictional community that I set entirely inside the city limits of Astoria, Oregon, which happens to be my birthplace in the town I lived the first 10 years of my life. And so the setting is Dickens Junction and its environs. For example, the Edwin Drood Murders is set almost entirely inside the Hotel Elliott, which is a pretty well-known boutique hotel.
Nice hotel.
Down in Astoria, where I stay when I visit there. And I decided that it would make a great place for a murder. So I decided to create a convention of people who are fascinated by the novel that Dickens was writing when he died, The Mystery of Edwin Drood. He left it precisely half finished, and he may or may not have left any notes regarding what was going to happen in the rest of the book. And so my book involves a convention of people who are fascinated with what Dickens might have done, and they are meeting at the Hotel Elliott, and then mayhem ensues.
Now, I was thinking about this in sort of a fun kind of way, if you will. You know, Dickens Junction can get sort of a Cabot Cove reputation. Did you think about that at all?
Well, certainly. I think Portland author Chelsea Kane mentioned Cabot Cove when she wrote a blurb for The Christmas Carol Murders, very intentionally that same hometown feel with an undercurrent of danger with a slice of humor added. It was absolutely what I was intending.
Now, you've created a bit of a niche in going back to Charles Dickens and using Dickens as the theme for the settings. And does this make you a Dickens aficionado, or did you have to do a lot of research? Give us a little background on how you picked that as a backdrop for your storyline.
I started reading Dickens with A Christmas Carol and Oliver Twist when I was about 12. But then when I was 14, I read Our Mutual Friend, which is the last novel that Dickens completed a few years before he died. And it was the most significant book I read in my life because it made me a lifelong reader and it made me someone who has been devoted to Dickens. If I had had the money, I would have gone to grad school and I would be teaching Dickens to graduate students today. But I didn't have money for grad school, so I went into the insurance industry and made a lot more money. However, I went to Dickens Universe a few months ago, which is the largest single author convocation in the world, and I actually I lectured to grad students. So after almost 40 years of being out of college, I finally got my wish and was able to deliver a lecture about Dickens Junction to a bunch of English grad students, which was quite a delight and treat for me.
Wow, what an experience that was. Yeah, were you nervous or were you excited? What was going on with that?
Well, I'm pretty comfortable with public speaking, so I wasn't nervous. I was one of the few non-scholars that was allowed to make a presentation, so I wasn't trying to compete with the scholars. So I was on pretty solid ground. I knew my books. I knew my material. I also learned once I got there that I was probably as well-read as anyone there, including most of the scholars. So I didn't have anything to be ashamed of.
No. And where did this take place?
It takes place every year at the University of Santa Cruz, UC Ooh. Santa Cruz, the first week in August. And next year's book is going to be Our Mutual Friend, so I'm already registered to go next year.
Oh, that sounds so cool. That sounds so cool. Now, one of the main characters, well, probably the main character in your stories is Simon Alistair. Tell us about him.
Well, Simon is the grandson of the man who founded Dickens Junction. And as such, he feels a responsibility to maintain the integrity of his town. He also, because his father is great-grandfather and his brother were lumber barons in Clatsop County, Simon has inherited a substantial amount of money and doesn't have to work for a living. So he chose to open a bookstore that only contains books that he has actually read. Since he doesn't have to sell Danielle Steel or make a living, he can be a little more select in what titles he carries. So he runs a bookstore in Dickens Junction and as a result of the Christmas Carol Murders and now Edmund Drood, manages to get involved in a little bit of murder and mayhem along the way.
Now, he has a love interest.
He does.
Tell us about that.
Well, in the first book, in Christmas Carol Murders, he met a reporter named Zach Benjamin, who showed up in town to do a travel feature on Dickens Junction, and as a result of the murders and his mutual interest in Simon, decided to stick around. And so we see him again in the Edwin Drood murders, where he and Simon are starting to forge a relationship.
Right, right. We won't get into the rest of that because we don't want to give stuff away. But
okay.
It's an interesting thing. Now, as a writer, when you're writing a mystery, do you know beforehand, I mean, you've got your characters laid out. You do an excellent job of outlines and you let the reader know who the characters are in the book before they even turn the first page, and the major characters. Do you know which person is going to be the killer?
I know everything before I start. I'm a very careful plotter and planner. I start out writing a 6 to 8 page single-spaced synopsis that tells me pretty much everything that happens, right up to and certainly including who the murderer is and how the murders were committed. I then create a scene-by-scene summary with an estimated word count so that I know how many words it's going to take me to get a particular plot point across. In the case of I've written three books now, I also have a spreadsheet showing where each character is at the time a murder is committed so that I know where everyone is supposed to be and where they say they are, so that the kinds of clue dropping and alibis will make sense and that I won't trip myself up halfway through the book. And I complete all of that before I write a single word of the first draft.
Wow. Wow. Talk about being focused. That's amazing. Now, does it ever happen, and even when you have everything all laid out and you're just primed and ready to go and you're in the process of writing the book now, but something occurs to you that you need to add something that's not a part of the outline or the spreadsheets or something else? Has that happened? And are you flexible enough to say, hey, I think this will help the story move along?
Well, as I said, I had an exhaustive outline, particularly for Christmas Carol Murders. And I was writing one day early on in the book, and suddenly I typed the sentence, the doorbell rang, and Simon opens the door, and it's his old friend George Bascom, who was not in the outline at all. And now George has become an integral part of the series. Although he plays a smaller role in Edwin Drood, he plays a much larger role in the third book, which I've written. And I can't imagine the Dickens Junction Mysteries without George Bascom, but he wasn't in the outline at all.
Right, right. Now, is Zach going to be playing a more integral part of the growth of future stories?
Yes, yes. I have finished the next book in the series, which is based on Our Mutual Friend and consequently called The Our Mutual Friend Murders. And Zach plays an even more active role in that book, in part because of the structure of the Dickens novel on which I based my book.
Okay.
So yes, you'll be seeing much more of Zach and George and Quilpy, the blogger that shows up for the first time in Edwin Drood. He makes an appearance in the next book also.
Great, great. For our listeners that are just joining us, this is an interview, a conversation. I like that word a lot better than an interview. Interview sounds so sterile. Conversation with Christopher Lord, who is the author of the Edwin Drood Murders, and we're talking about his new book and the process of writing too, which I have a passion for.
We'll be back with more from Christopher Lord after this brief timeout.
Christopher, tell me this. If you saw Simon Alistair walking down the street right now, would you recognize him?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think so. I have a somewhat fluid picture of him in my mind, but at times it congeals, if you will. I have a much clearer picture of what Zach looks like, since he looks exactly like John Stamos. But Simon shifts from time
to
taller? Time. Simon's taller than Zach, yes.
No, Zach is taller than John Stamos?
I don't know exactly how tall Mr. Stamos is.
Oh, I'm just going by what I've seen him on TV, but yeah. Well, all right. Let's talk for a little bit about. Now, before we do that, folks are going to want to buy you this book. How can they find it?
Well, it should be available in local bookstores here in Portland. If not, ask for it by name. It's definitely available in all the online outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Powell's.com. And it's available as an ebook exclusively through Amazon.
Okay. Now, you've gone through your second book. The publisher is putting you in all of these various platforms that we see to date. What seems to be the most popular platform for you to use? Is it the hard copy book on a shelf, or is it the ebook? What direction do you see the most success in?
Well, I expected ebooks to sell more widely than the paperback. For one thing, the ebook is offered at a very competitive price, $2.99 on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and most of the other outlets, whereas the trade paperback retails at a discount for somewhere between $11 and $12 or $13.95 if you buy it at true retail price. But oddly enough, I am selling about 3-to-1 hard copy books over the ebooks. I was surprised, since I knew that many readers of genre fiction who read a lot of books were early adopters of the Kindle program, and mystery and romance readers tend to be the readers who buy the most books. So I thought I would sell a lot of ebooks, but so far, most of the sales have been traditional.
Cool. Now, that being the case, have you found it pretty easy to get your, as an independent indie writer, do you find it easy to get your, get some space on bookshelves among the local retailers?
No.
Why?
Well, for one thing, I don't have a marketing rep showing up at the local bookstores with a catalog with my book prominently displayed, showing which fabulous writers loved it months and months in advance before the release. So the only way bookstore owners find out about my book is by, frankly, my publicist letting them know. For example, with Edwin Drood, we sent out an advance copy to every mystery bookstore in the United States, something we hadn't done with the prior book. And I'm hoping that that will get some attention. Specialty independent bookstores like mystery bookstores, which are still around in some places, they have very loyal customers, and they know their customers really well, and they will pitch books to specific buyers. So if they know about my book, then they're more likely to sell it. So I'm hoping this particular technique worked well. I will say, however, that as an independent publisher, to get a book out into traditional bookstores is very difficult.
It you know, you would think that with the numbers of books that are being self-published, published on demand, and there are some really good writers in that mix, that bookstores would be open to looking at some of these new and up and coming writers as help promote their work, as well as support the work of writers that have, you know, don't really have to knock themselves out anymore.
Well, you'd think that, but one of the big barriers is that most distributors who are doing wholesale allow bookstores to return unsold copies. So the bookstores don't have to take a risk with higher inventories. If they want to clean out some stock that hasn't sold, they can return it to the distributor and get a refund. That's pretty challenging to do with self-published books when the distributor is the writer, and the writer doesn't want to give a refund, and the bookstore doesn't want the risk of unsold copies. So you reach an impasse where the bookstore owner often says, I just can't take the risk on stocking your book. And I'm a business person, you're a business person. I understand that retailers are in precarious positions. Holding on to inventory costs money, and so they don't want to take the risk sometimes.
Now, booksellers often will offer writers, I've discovered, to bring in their books on consignment. How's that work for you?
I'm fine with working on consignment. I have several boxes of books at all times, and so if a bookstore owner says they want 10 copies on consignment, I'm fine with that. That's less of a risk because the bookstore owner then can order the precise number of copies they want, and they only have to pay you as the writer at the end of whatever time period you agree to
right.
for the books that actually sold. But I've also found that in my case that the bookstore owners will at least keep 4 or 5 copies on hand after the time period elapses, so they continue to sell it as store stock, which is good for me.
Sure. I would think that doing it on consignment is at least one good way of building a relationship with that retailer.
I've had some great experiences with the indie bookstore owners with when I went on tour, if you want to call it that, for Christmas Carol Murders, and I'll be doing some readings locally. We're still working on exactly which ones. But I'll tell you, these independent bookstore owners, they put their heart and soul into their businesses. They love books. In some cases, they love books even more than I do. And I worked in a bookstore earlier in my life, and I've been a book person all my life. And to say that somebody loves books more than I do, that's really, in my mind, an impressive feat.
Well, I'm excited about the possibility again of new writers, and I'm running across more and more of them all the time. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought that the wealth of writers in the Pacific Northwest was really growing, but I just see it absolutely mushrooming. It just is just expanding in such ways.
I think if you threw a rock, you'd hit a whole bunch of writers in Portland. You're right. They're everywhere. We're everywhere.
Yeah. We're everywhere. Okay. Any readings coming up soon that you have on the schedule that people might be interested in?
I should have brought my calendar. I'll be doing several appearances on the coast. We're still working on a trip to Astoria. I'll be reading at Cannon Beach Books on, I believe that's November 2nd. I'll be reading at Annie Bloom's here in Portland on Monday, November 4th. I will be part of the Manzanita Writer Series at Manzanita.
Getting into some good venues.
I believe that's November 16th, and I've got dates in December.
Yeah.
Also, I should have checked my calendar before I came.
Well, you know, a lot of Portland folk like going over to the coast, so, you know, it's a good thing to take up, especially if it's a stormy evening and, you know, hey, let's go over to the and listen to this guy read his book. Okay. How is that going to play in the is it going to follow the same theme line that the other two books have?
Well, the next book is written, at least it's drafted, and it's called The Our Mutual Friend Murders, and it takes up 4 months after Edwin Drood Murders ends with a new cast of characters, if you will. It's set partially again in Astoria. It opens with a scene on the river, the Young's River, and then an elaborate dinner party held at the Flavel House Museum in Astoria, which was an icon for me when I was a child. I suspect it's going to be released in the spring of 2015. I think that we'll probably move from a fall release date to a spring release date. There are fewer books to compete with. My book was released on the same day that Stephen King released Dr. Sleep, his sequel to The Shining, and I hope that the release of my book didn't hurt his sales.
Well, I don't think they're going to be throwing any benefits for Stephen King anytime soon.
Probably not.
Yeah. Christopher, it's been great having you in the studio again. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. Folks, I've had Christopher Lord in the studio. He is the author of The Edwin Drood Murders, and it is the second book in his series of Dickens Junctions murders. Pretty dangerous place to live, let me tell you. But great stories and a really good guy to sit and talk to. And you're listening to KBOO, celebrating 45 great years of serving the Portland metro area. And we're so happy to be doing that because we're community radio. And I'm Dan Johnson.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a salsa dance party to celebrate 17 years of the Community Alliance of Tenants, the only statewide grassroots tenants rights organization. December 6th, from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m., this party will include a light dinner buffet, short program, and salsa lesson. It will take place at the Grand Cafe at 832 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland, Oregon. Again, that's the Community Alliance of Tenants Salsa Party, December 6th, from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Grand Cafe. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
How much fun it's gonna be together this Christmas.
Christmas, the fireside is blazing bright. We're caroling through the night, and this Christmas will be a very special Christmas for me. Presents and cards are here. My world is filled with
good morning and welcome to the December edition of Black Book Talk. I'm Patricia Welch, the library lady. With me this morning are...
I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman.
And O.B. Hill, Reflections, Miriam H. Books.
And we're going to give our holiday gift to you today, and our gift will be a recounting or a sharing of our favorite books this year. Maybe ones where we interview the author, may not, but books that you might want to read to enjoy your holiday, or even better, you might want to share with somebody else. Hey, you might do all of your holiday shopping or whatever in the next few minutes. Who wants to go first?
Well, I think one of my favorite books this year was the one by Denora Taylor. Oh, because it was scary, but not too scary. It was about generational curses, and her title was... It just went out of my mouth.
Because we are women of a certain age, and that's what happens. I know what you mean, because it's only two words. Yeah. It's like, if by chance. You know, so we're going to have to come back
if
around to that. But that's not it. You know something? We can look it up.
Yes, that's why I pulled it
up. But you can still tell us a little about it while we're thinking. That wasn't fair to spring the first one. I'll tell you what. While you're looking that up, I'll share my first because it's sitting right here in front of it, and I am crazy about it. My first book of the year just came into my life like about 2 weeks ago. I had seen it, and then I noticed that it won a prize, so I said, well, I'll just read a little bit. I started reading the book. I was sitting around other people. I was laughing out loud. And the book is entitled The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat. It is a novel. It is by Edward Kelsey Moore. And I must say that this is a man who writes in the voice of women and does so very, very well. The Supremes are three high school